Welcome back to the program. The joke for years was that everybody talked about the weather, but that nobody did anything about it. Today it seems like everybody talks about the economy. We throw around words like capitalism and socialism, but in many respects, not only are we not doing anything about it, we don't really understand it. We're going to talk about that this morning with my guest, Gretchen Morgenson. She's a business and financial editor and columnist at the New York Times. She's covered the world of finance for well over a decade. She was for a time a part of that world. She's a recipient of the Pulitzer Prize and the author of a new book, The Capitalist Bible, The Essential Guide to Free Markets and Why They Matter to You. Gretchen Morgenson, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, Jeff. Happy to be there.
Is it safe to say about capitalism what Winston Churchill once said about democracy, that it's a very bad system, but it's better than anything else?
It's the best we've got, yeah. We are actually in the throes of a severe, as you know, financial maelstrom, and I think people are questioning to the very, very basics whether capitalism is, in fact, the best system for creating wealth, creating jobs, and, economic freedom and prosperity. And so I think that it's a very good time to sort of refresh and, go back in time and research how our brand of capitalism came about. And, really examine what went wrong this time around so that we can be sure that it won't happen again.
But, of course, these things do, in different forms certainly, do happen again and again. If we look at the history of capitalism, the history of finance in this country, mm-hmm. we see these ups and downs. What seems to be different this time, and this does relate to the idea of people having a better understanding, what seems to be different this time is there's a broader knowledge of everything that goes on in kind of a hyper, sped-up, real-time way. We look at, downturns in the mid to late 80s and certainly before that. People weren't as connected to every little thing that was going on.
Well, I think we have a lot more information out there. We have the Internet. Of course, we have financial news programs on television. We have, the old standby newspapers, magazines, books devoted to it. I'm not sure that it is, in this case, more is necessarily better, because it can also be completely confusing to people. But I do think that we have a very much more engaged investor group out there, because, of course, we now are responsible, for the most part, for our retirement accounts, and that was never the case before. So we have to really understand what's going on out there.
And, of course, one of the things that we see over and over again is that a little bit of knowledge about these areas is often a dangerous thing for people.
Exactly. And, while it's easy to want to rely on pundits, who tell you 10 stocks to buy now, it really isn't wise for the long term. There really is a sense that you have to do, unfortunately, a lot of this homework yourself.
And one of the things that you talk about in the various sections of the Capitalist Bible is that it's not just about the markets and what we see taking place, but that there's a long history and a depth of understanding required if one is going to understand how markets work, how capitalism works.
Well, I think that's right, Jeff, but I also don't want to scare away too many people, because it really isn't all that complex. I mean, just understanding the basics of our society and how capital is raised, and how the stock market works, and how it helps entrepreneurs to get access to money that investors are willing to provide. These things are pretty simple, when you don't have someone trying to obfuscate, and Wall Street often tries to make things way more complicated than they need to be. But I think that you can grasp the essentials, and that can really help you feel more comfortable and confident.
Talk about that business of Wall Street trying to make things more complicated. Is it, in your view, intentional? Is it just the nature of the beast? What is that about?
It's a very difficult question to answer. I can only conclude, but it's not a scientific conclusion, that it is by design. That, when you have complexity in securities or in investment strategies, I think that it often translates to greater profits for the people who are selling you those securities. Take, for example, the mortgage securities that have been at the root of so much of our problems. these were, you know, in the old days, when you wanted to buy a home, you went to your local banker. The banker looked you over and decided whether you were financially sound enough to receive the loan. You then made your payments and paid off the home, and you were done with it, had a mortgage burning party. Well, nowadays, Wall Street has concocted these mortgage securities that consist of thousands of loans that are all pooled together, where it is impossible for the homeowner to find out who actually owns their loan. And when they get into trouble, they find it impossible to know who to deal with to ask for forbearance. So that's, I think, a perfect example of, you know, Wall Street taking a perfectly simple thing, a mortgage loan, and making it so darn complicated that, you know, kind of the whole system grinds to a halt.
Should people think about the investment arena and their investments without really an understanding, a grounding in capitalism, in markets, in some of the things that you write about in the Capitalist Bible?
I think that people need to have a really good understanding of it, Jeff, because I do think that there are risks associated with capitalism. I mean, traditionally, capitalism was the kind of system where you would take a risk for a hoped for reward, but you know it's not without peril, and we certainly are unfortunately seeing many risks that were taken by others that are now being covered by taxpayers in a really unfair sort of twist of fate that is not really what capitalism calls for at all. But in the normal sense of things, when you do go into the stock market, consider buying into a company, there are, of course, risks, and so you should understand those before you put your money down.
Will this current crisis result in kind of a reset of how we approach capitalism?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I think that there is enough dissension, discomfort, distrust out there right now that really we could use a complete and thorough airing of what went wrong, why it went wrong, who the perpetrators were, and with any luck at all, some sort of accountability to those people. I mean, one of the things we have not yet seen, even though this crisis has been going on for 2 years now, is an investigation of, you know, exactly what happened. Back in the 30s, we did have such a thing after the crash of 1929. We had a very aggressive prosecutor from New York named Ferdinand Pecora, who thoroughly investigated that crisis, hauled up bankers onto Capitol Hill and made them testify under oath, and people actually went to jail as a result of his investigation. We have not yet done that, and I think until we do, people are really going to continue to think that the deck is stacked.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we will see that in a formal government process, or do you think that we'll see it more in the journalistic realm, that there are still some wonderful books to be written about what we are still going through but have essentially been through?
I think so, unfortunately. I wish I could say that I felt that we saw a movement by our government to get to the bottom of this mess and a thorough understanding of it. But I'll be frank with you, Jeff, I think that the reason we have not seen that up until now is because there were many, many legislators involved in this situation and in the creation of it. And so I think that these people know that any investigation could lead to their door.
Mm-hmm. When we look at what we have been through, what's gone on, is it a result of things that are inherent in capitalism, or is it simply the excesses of unregulated capitalism?
Well, I would say the latter. It's really the last 10 years we were in a period of time when the balances, the checks and balances on capitalism were sort of thrown to the winds. We had a feeling that, and operated under this view, that regulation was too stringent, that it would harm competitiveness in this country, and basically we had a sort of a series of regulators who just did not have the appetite to regulate. So I'm not advocating further or additional regulations, but I think that what this episode indicates is that we do need to have regulators who actually want to do their jobs in a serious way.
The way we view business today, the way we view capitalism today, the way the through the media lens, that there is almost or certainly was at the height of the markets, an almost pornographic quality to the way we looked at excess and success. Talk a little about that, Gretchen.
Yeah, this is something that I am, equally intrigued by and don't really know the ultimate answer to, but you look along the way, any one of us who is interested in how we got here, you look for signposts along the way and sort of changes or shifts in behavior and mentalities. And I would say that since the 80s, there has been this kind of belief that, people with more things or people with more money are somehow more revered or more looked up to. And it's not so much that you have leadership qualities, it's that you have the most stuff. And so, therefore, that means that you must be good or you must be a leader. I think that maybe we just might be going through a period where we're questioning that, and I think that would be all to the good.
The corollary with that is what role the media has played in all of this, both in terms of creating that environment that you're talking about and really covering the fall at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say certainly that during the lead-up to this now crisis, the media was almost as asleep at the switch as the regulators were. I mean, we do have checks and balances in this country. One of them is a free press. And what we really saw during this period was, as you describe it, a kind of reverence for these people and for these entities, these institutions that had grown so large and were, in fact, taking outsized risks that people weren't recognizing. And so I think that the media, particularly, has a lot to answer for here as far as being a kind of co-conspirator, as it were, on the way up.
What about the way in which the markets are covered today, the way in which capitalism and business are covered today, particularly on cable, and that sort of immediacy and what impact that has?
Well, I have, always viewed the cable business shows as more infotainment, as it were. I mean, it really isn't telling you how to invest wisely. I mean, when, not to pick on any one person in particular, but when you have a infotainment specialist like Jim Cramer advising buy, hold, sell on stocks, in split seconds, it goes completely against any idea of, doing your homework before you invest. So I think that these shows that sort of characterize business coverage as watching the horse race, which stock groups are up, which are down, this immediate gratification element, really do a disservice to most investors who really have to take the long view and are looking for a retirement that's going to be more prosperous. And you just can't do you can't do that well at investing if you're jumping around and trading in and out and following this one's tip and that one's tip.
And certainly what we have been going through for the past year or so may finally put in a different light on this idea of business as entertainment.
Well, it certainly isn't very entertaining to watch your 401k go down 50%,
right.
As I did myself last year. So, it's serious. It's not fun and games. It's not a joke. It's something that you really are counting on for, your future years. And I just agree. It's not funny, and it's not. It should not be entertainment. It should be pretty serious.
Beyond the sound bites, what do people need to understand about capitalism in a global environment? That markets today, as we have seen, are so much more interconnected, and the scope of understanding that people need to have is therefore wider.
Yeah, I think that one of the disturbing elements to many people about capitalism is what has been called its creative destruction. And certainly in my business, in the newspaper business, we have seen the creative destruction that has been wreaked by the Internet, which is, you know, reducing profits in newspapers. Well, now this is a force of nature. It's a force of the consumer. You cannot stop it. You can't reverse it. We're not going to go back in time. And so you have to embrace it and figure out how to, you know, make your situation work within that, the confines of that change. I think people also would take a look at globalization, in which jobs, high-paying jobs, often leave this country and go to places where they are, you know, paid far less. Employees are paid far less to do the same thing. That is a very upsetting aspect of capitalism. I will be the first to grant you, but it again is something that we cannot reverse, and you can't, you know, pretend to hold off.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you talk about in the Capitalist Bible are things people should read, sort of the essential primers to capitalism. Talk a little about that.
Well, some of them are fun to read. You know, we have a list of must reading in the back of the book. Some of them are kind of hard going. They're political theory, but nonetheless important. Adam Smith, of course, his book that is called The Wealth of Nations, that's crucial. But, you know, there are some easier reading that I think give people a very good idea of how things work. And one of my favorite books is Barbarians at the Gate, mm-hmm. which was written in 1990 about the big takeover of RJR Nabisco by the leveraged buyout firm KKR. That was a wonderful story, very easy to read, but really, you know, very educational. I think also Friedrich Hayek's book, The Road to Serfdom, is an enormously important book that people should read, and that was written at a time when capitalism was, you know, really deeply questioned, and he makes a very, very good argument for it.
How much damage is done economically from the fact that our economics today has become as politicized as it is?
Well, I think that it always was politicized. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Again, these are very difficult things, nuances, to understand whether what we're living through is different from what was lived through in the past. But I think that people really do need a thorough grasp of the way our system works so that they can, in fact, differentiate between, you know, what people are promoting as perhaps their own political agenda and what really really is the reality of the situation.
And oftentimes the political rhetoric is disconnected from the reality of the economics.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we all know that statistics can be used to promote whatever side of the coin you're promoting. So, you know, it's something that you really need to be able to cut your way through.
Do we need to take a different approach, a more universal approach even, in terms of how we educate young people today about economics?
That's a really, really crucial point, and I'm so glad you made it, Jeff, because I think that if we began to educate our children in even secondary school or, you know, seventh grade, maybe even earlier, about such basics as, you know, how to balance your checkbook, what is income, what is outflow, what does a salary involve, how much does the government take out of it. You know, I think that kids today often grow up thinking that money grows on trees and have no respect or understanding of how hard it is to make a buck. And so I think getting that understanding early on would be so, so helpful.
And what role do sort of celebrity capitalists play, people like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates?
Well, Warren Buffett, I think, plays a pretty good role as a person who has done very well by investing extremely carefully with not straying from his usual tactics. You know, he's not a person who goes with whatever the current investment fad is. And so from that standpoint, I think he's a very good example of how you can make a lot of money by simply looking through the financial statements. You don't have to kind of buy the rhetoric. You don't have to buy the spin. If the financials tell you that this is a good company to buy, buy it. and, you know, keep adding to it, hold on to it, and chances are, you know, you'll be rewarded. So from the standpoint of him being a person who exemplifies sticking to your knitting, doing your homework, and, you know, reaping the rewards, I think that he's an excellent example of that. Now, Bill Gates is a person who's a wonderful kind of aspirational figure, I think, for many, of a guy who built a business, a huge, enormously profitable business, you know, after having a couple of strikeouts. You know, he dropped out of Harvard. So, you know, I think he's a character that people look to as, wow, if, you know, he's smart, to be sure, but he used a lot of elbow grease, too. So I think that he's a good example of the entrepreneurial spirit that characterizes America.
You talk about the aspirational aspect of Bill Gates, and one of the phrases that we hear, certainly we heard it a lot when things were going well, is this notion of aspirational capitalism. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, all I think that means is, I mean, I don't want to put too much of a fancy spin on it. All it means is that, you know, this is the system in which you are supposed to be able to try to achieve your best, to try to go out and get, you know, follow your dream, follow your star. And if it means starting a company with a great idea that you had, that's one thing. If it means pursuing your best skill to the greatest advantage, that's it too. So I think it's sort of a way to look at economic freedom. And what that means to you is just being able to capitalize on whatever your best skills are and going out and getting it.
How difficult has it been for you, for journalists in general, to explain in clear language some of the things that have gone on in the current economic crisis?
Well, it's a challenge, I think, because as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, things are becoming a little bit more complicated, and Wall Street does have this way of making simple things complex so that they can profit from them. But, you know, it can be done. I think that it's not impossible, and people really should do their best to try to understand it. And I think a lot of people have a kind of mental block, you know, oh, I can't possibly understand this. It's just complicated. It's money. It's finance. It's way over my head. And I always tell people that I meet who tell me that it's not true. It really is common sense. If you just get beyond some of the verbiage and some of the, you know, strange lingo that Wall Street throws around, it's pretty much common sense.
Gretchen Morgenson of the New York Times. Her new book is The Capitalist Bible, The Essential Guide to Free Markets and Why They Matter to You. It's just published by Harper Perennial. Gretchen, it's been a pleasure. I thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jeff.